Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up?
Hey, hey. How's it going?
You know, I've been working a lot recently. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Puerto Rico soon.
I'm taking a trip
tomorrow. Literally. I know, yeah. Literally. But I'm a little spirit tank a little low today.
Same. Morale is low. Morale is low.
Will you want to talk about why?
Prince Rogers Nelson has sadly and surprisingly passed away.
Yeah.
I honestly, like, I mean, I as soon as I found out, I like slacked you.
Yeah.
And I was like, literally, I'm floored. I didn't really know what to say.
I was in the middle of an interview when you said to me, like talking to another person. And I was like on the phone. Yeah. And I was like, oh shit. I had to keep my composure. And I felt like I felt sick to my stomach immediately. Oh yeah, side note. This episode ain't about Prince, by the way.
It's not. And honestly, that's why we're talking right now.
Yeah.
Because you know, we would be remiss if we didn't say something.
Something.
To jump back to, you know, we talk about music a lot. And we talk about, like, the canon and the greats and the goats.
Yeah.
And even in the Stevie episode, we talked Michael, Stevie, Prince.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this trinity or one trinity in terms of greatest of all time. So to have two of those now be passed away.
Yeah.
In what feels like before their time.
Oh, definitely before their time.
It's tough, man.
It is tough. And it's tough too because, like, not to speak ill of the dead, but like Michael was struggling for a long time. Do you know what I'm saying? There was a lot we didn't know about him. Like, it was obvious that something was up health-wise. And he kind of lived this life that was, like, shrouded in mystery and, like, melancholy.
Yeah.
But Prince seemed to be, like, in good, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he was moving.
Yeah, like, he was moving. He seemed to be chill. Like, I didn't know anything.
Not even chill, vibrant.
Exactly, exactly. And he was under 60, so I was thinking, okay, he seems to be in good health. He's gone natural.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Prince was natural, so you know what I'm saying? So, like, he had the chemical relaxer. He had laid off of it. I think he was, he seemed to really take his eating pretty seriously. He was somebody who I was just like, he'll be around.
Same. So, to have him be gone now, like, honestly, I don't know how to handle that.
I felt like a member of my family was gone.
Yeah. Literally one of, like, so my first goal in life was to be big enough that I could be like Prince and have my best friend be my assistant, like Jerome.
I know. I knew you were going to bring this up.
I recognize that is narcissistic. I think you still have time, Brittany, and the space is still there. But that said, like, literally, this man was like my first, like in terms of my dream of what I wanted to aspire myself to, it was to be like Prince.
See, I feel like two things about Prince. Well, I feel many things about Prince. But the first two that come to mind, when I think of myself as very young, is like, I like felt so other when I was a kid for all these different reasons. I just felt so weird. I always felt like I was different than other people who were like immediately around me. And like, I remember seeing I wasn't allowed to watch all of Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I remember when Diamonds and Pearls, that album came out.
Yeah.
And also seeing like little snippets of Purple Rain, like over my parents' shoulders on the couch or whatever, like sneaking down kind of late at night trying to see what they were up to. And I remember being like, this guy had like hair like my mom and like was wearing these blouses and had these purple suits and like this eyeliner and
heels,
and he was so popping and he was so different than like anybody had ever seen before. And I remember being like, this person understands me. Like, I feel like if there's anything about you that's really fucking weird, or if you feel really fucking weird, then I feel like Prince was like an easy person for you to connect with, because he was just so himself. And he was like, he thought you were crazy if you thought he was crazy.
Well, the thing is, you couldn't apply terms to Prince.
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing. He kind of, like, subverted every box.
Mm-hmm.
While at the same time acknowledging them all.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, like, that, I mean, that was something, like, people hadn't really done at his level. Like, he took stardom in the Black community to, like, a completely new level.
Yeah.
And a completely new space in terms of what it looked like.
Yeah.
He's hard to describe.
Yeah.
Like, you have to describe him in, like, very explicit, like, he is wearing, you know, a purple velvet suit with heels, with a blouse that's, none of the buttons are buttoned, but it's also got the ruffles.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's got bangs in some cases.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, there might be, like, face paint. You have to describe him in this way that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And you can't sum it up.
Yeah.
And that was always okay.
Yeah. And not only that, he was, like, real Black. Like, Prince was super Black. Like, I feel like there's this, like, with a lot of people of our generation, this makes me sound old, a lot of people think that if you're weird, you're somehow, like, not a lot of people, but there's, like, this idea that if you're weird, then the other Black people don't understand you or something like that.
Yeah.
Like when we talked about Dope.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? And or like even like if you're like somehow being like, I don't know, not even just like being weird makes you less Black, but also like being like he just didn't like, or if you want to be, if you want to transcend like labels, if you want to transcend like societal labels, or if you want to transcend societal ideas of X, Y, or Z, then you need to shirk your Blackness. Yeah. And Prince was like, no, I'm not any of this other shit, or I'm all of it, but I'm also definitely Black, and that's not changing.
Yeah.
That's definitely static. The other thing I liked about him is that he's from the Midwest. He stayed in the Midwest.
Yeah. He always read for the Midwest, and behind the scenes was really connected and like held people down, like was, you know, was very much into putting new people on, you know?
Yeah. Yes.
And women on.
Yes.
And Black women on.
Black. Look, King, amazing fucking musical trio, three Black women. They were trying to, I think I heard two of their songs on NPR in 2008, and I was like, yo, they're awesome. They're about to blow up. Their songs are awesome. Like, their graphics are great. That's all you really need now.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be great. And, like, nobody cared, because there was, like, three brown-skinned women, and they were like, okay, ho-hum. Prince emailed them. Prince was just like, I'm going to send these girls an email. And the next thing you know, I'm seeing them have a Tiny Desk concert, and they're going out to Essence Fest, and they're starting to tour more, because Prince was just like, oh, you're talented. Come through.
Yeah. And that's something he's always done. Now, have folks stuck around? But
no. But hey, he gave you.
He gave a shot.
He
put you out there.
Hey, he wasn't. I mean, you know, he wasn't Diddy.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's saying a lot.
True. So this isn't, as we said before, this isn't an episode about Prince.
No, it's not.
To be honest, I don't know if we will do an episode about Prince. We might,
I don't know.
But as two big R&B fans.
Yeah.
Two big music fans.
Yeah.
Like,
two big Blackness fans.
Yeah. Two big weirdness fans.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, we just could not say, like, rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to miss you.
Miss you. Oh, God, so much.
Prince. So, anyway, Yo, go listen to Purple Rain. Go listen to Sign of the Times.
Sign of the Times.
Musicology.
I saw Prince on the Musicology tour. My daddy and my mama took me and my sisters in like 2003 or four. Life-changing fucking experience.
Like, literally every album.
Yeah.
Is like rich. And you have to almost listen to them separately because they are all meant to do different things.
Yeah, I would say this weekend, if you have a bae or somebody that you at least feel okay about, put on Diamonds and Pearls.
Yeah. Oh, and your fucking kids. So, like, seriously, play Prince for your kids.
Yeah.
Because there's kids out there who don't know who Prince is, and that is a travesty.
It is a travesty. It's weird. To me, he's somebody who's so pervasive in the culture and has such a vaulted space in society. Like, how can your children not know who the fuck Prince is? What is wrong with you?
Like, just take a step back. It's not too late. It's not too late. Play Purple Rain. Play the movie. They'll get it.
They'll get it.
They'll get it.
They'll get it.
So anyway.
All right. Thank you.
And here's the show.
Here's the show. And I'm Brittany.
And we are
The Colored Nerds.
The conversations that black people have
when white people are not in the room.
But we record it.
And we put them on the internet.
So, welcome to today's show.
Welcome.
How's it going, Brittany?
You know what? Honestly, I'm doing good. I'm just living my life like it's golden. As you know,
yeah.
I recently went to Hudson Valley. I had an amazing long weekend. It's so much fun. And I love nature. A lot of people don't know that about me. I love nature. I got to be in nature and I got to eat a lot of amazing food. I had literally phenomenal duck liver ravioli and like a mustard sauce with breadcrumbs.
That sounds good. The nature part doesn't sound like something.
You don't like nature?
I mean, I don't actually like, I like being in nature. I don't like doing things in nature.
Like what?
So
you like to look at it and stand there and...
So I want my goals to have like a cabin in the woods with a porch and a chair where I could sit and like read or like drink a beer or like some tea or whittle, you know, something like that.
Eric.
That's
you're
like...
You're never going to pick up a hobby that involves...
The hobby
a
is
knife?
The hobby is sitting and then like creating something with my hands from the earth.
You have no desire to do that now. Why would you?
Well, that's the thing. Like in nature, I'm connecting.
Why don't you just like hike? I went hiking at the best time. I've been hiking 4 times this year.
No, I don't like that.
No, when was the last time you went hiking?
I can't remember because I don't do that activity.
I'm telling you, you know what? That's racism at work.
No.
But yes. No.
It's
listen.
Not about me being.
No.
Black.
I'm talking. Listen. They kept black people out of like the parks for a long time.
I don't mind going to a park. I'm not just.
But that's where a lot of hiking gets done in like national park preserves.
But I'm not gonna just. I mean, the thing is, like, that's like, hey, let's just go walk around. I could do that in Flatbush.
It looks different, Eric.
I know, but it's not. It's not. You still walking. The activity is the same.
Anyway.
Well, again, I support. I'm glad you went. You had a good time.
I went. I had a good time. I had a great time. Went to Target recently. I went to SoulCycle for the first time recently.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
It was, I'm going to be honest. I was stressed the whole time. I ended up going and it was fun, but it was confusing. And the way the thing that stressed me out before I went is that the shoes lock into the bike.
Oh, so it's like for real spinning. Okay.
Yeah,
because I was curious whether or not. Nah, so you were in it.
No, the thing is that they tell you at the end of the class, they're like, this is like a part where they're like, okay, well, you know, like unlock your foot, get off the bike. I couldn't unlock my feet. I took the shoes off and I got off the bike barefoot because
you could. So could you?
I couldn't figure out how to remove my shoe from the bike, so I just had to take my shoes were left on my bike.
That's deep. But you enjoyed the exercise?
I felt feral and ridiculous after it was over when I was walking around standing in this dark, hot room barefoot because I didn't know how to take off my shoes. But
did you have to take a whole bunch of breaks? Like, no shade, but did you have to, like, I'm curious as to, like, because...
I'll put you like this. I'm sure the instructor felt like I was taking a break the entire class. I felt like I was. The other thing is too, and this might be too much information, but you know when you sit on a bike seat?
Yo, it's uncomfortable.
Oh my God.
It's really intense. But over time, that actually is more comfortable. So I never believed that. I was always the one who got like, who's like, ah, this seat is too hard. You know,
that's
feels like
I
rocks.
Feel.
And then got the like comfortable jail seat, like for, mm-hmm. you know, that seems like what you would sit on, like if you had like hemorrhoids or something.
Yeah.
So I would always get that. But then the truth is, the hard seat actually is preferable, especially over long distances. You don't necessarily, like you have more control over the bike. And yeah, it's
that's crazy.
It's deep. I mean, I now prefer it, but that first week, whew.
Yeah, so I was intense. In pain. And then like it hurt. It didn't feel necessarily so bad like on my butt, the seat at the time. In the days after when I was up north, mm-hmm. it did hurt my butt. And my butt was hurting.
That's it.
But you know what I'm saying?
Commitment
to fitness. That's what we're known for around these parts. Is our commitment to fitness.
You know?
Anyway, yeah, I'm here. I'm chilling. How you doing?
I'm doing good, you know?
Yeah, you doing good?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's good.
You know, just trying new things.
Like what? Not fucking hiking.
Not hiking. You know, just embracing new experiences and opportunities.
Okay.
And, you know, just rolling with that.
Okay. Well, you know, I am glad to hear that for you.
I'm glad too. Thank
I'm
you.
Glad.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm trying to think, is there anything else we need to update people on? I keep thinking that there was something else. No, I think I'm just hungry.
You might be.
Anyway.
You should have one of my milk and cereal bars.
Oh, my God. Eric came in here this morning with this bar. I had never seen anything like this
Those
before.
Those shits are good.
It was in a pack. Let me see the package. Eric came in here today with this Cinnamon Toast Crunch milk and cereal bar. Yeah. They say the filling is made with real milk. The filling is something akin to buttercream frosting.
It is so
And
good.
Then they take this cereal and they break it down, and then they cover it in sugar, and then they put the frosting in between two halves.
Yeah.
And then they package it.
It's perfect.
And that's something apparently people should be able to have for breakfast?
Yeah. I mean, right now, in my bag, there are six more of these bars and blocks, like Eve's toys. So, I don't know. My whole, like, internal situation is kind of fucked up just because I never have time to eat the breakfast that I want. Like, today we had a muffin.
We shared a muffin, had some coffee, had some grapes.
But, you know, any given day, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. So, I try to prepare myself with something I know if shit goes left and I can't have the breakfast that I want, I can have these lovely Cinnamon Toast Crunch milk and cereal.
That would give me a headache. But I did try a bite of it. It tastes like
it's not bad.
Birthday cake. It doesn't taste bad. It's just not appropriate breakfast food. I can't believe people give it to children.
It's the other side of the spectrum from Special K and granola. Special K and granola, you know, milk and cereal bars.
Anyway.
So what are we talking about today? Today we are... Well, we got an email. That's where we should start.
We got an email.
So we got an email from one of our amazing listeners. Thank you to everyone who takes the time out to send us an email.
Yeah, we love them.
We love them, and we don't deserve you because we rarely get the chance to respond. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Eli Montgomery, we appreciate you.
Yes.
You sent us an email titled, What is Wrong with Ghostbusters? and you basically detailed what a lot of people had noticed was that when the Ghostbusters trailers dropped to much anticipation,
yeah,
it was a little odd that, you know, we had these three white women scientists.
White women scientists.
And Leslie Jones, who is a MTA worker.
Yes. She's black also.
Yes.
In case y'all, if you didn't know what we
Jones.
Do around here. Yes.
And a lot of folks wanted to know, what's up with that? So, you know, you emailed us, you asked us, hey, can you talk about it? You were confused, a little pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually felt kind of the same way. And there's been a few things.
Yeah.
Kind of bubbling.
A few things.
So, I mean, to come back, if you don't know.
If you don't know.
Ghostbusters.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Which is one of, like, I think universally revered as, like, one of the best comedies of all time. Like, comedy films of all time.
Yeah.
Love Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters 2 is pretty good, too. Folks sleep on Ghostbusters 2.
Ghostbusters 2 is actually the first. I saw Ghostbusters first. I remember Ghostbusters 2 first.
Yeah. That's actually probably
crazy.
The way it worked for me, too.
Yeah.
But both of them, excellent films. Mm-hmm. Like, as close to perfect films as you could probably get. Mm-hmm. But they're remaking Ghostbusters. Paul Feig, who is the director, rewrote the film. I think it's a mix of a reboot and a sequel. So, yeah. Like, obviously, they're for the most part ignoring a lot of the earlier film where it's been mm-hmm. just a shit ton of time. And it's being done this time with an all-female team.
Yes.
All-female cast.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea.
With a lot of heavy hitters in terms of comedic talent. Yeah. You have Kristen Wiig.
Yes.
Melissa McCarthy.
Yes.
Kate McKinnon.
Yes.
And like we said.
She's on Saturday Night Live.
She's on Saturday Night Live.
I didn't know. I'm just saying for people who don't, I didn't know who she was because I don't watch Saturday Night Live.
She's
obviously on Saturday. I'm asleep.
Yeah.
But yes, from what I understand, she's very funny.
She's really funny. I actually really, really enjoy mm-hmm. Kate McKinnon. And Leslie Jones, who, you know, I mean, I was really excited when she was cast.
Me too.
You know, because one black woman coming up.
Yeah. And she's 35.
Yeah, which doesn't.
She's not young.
Yeah. She wasn't cast off. She was kept in the mix.
Yeah, and she has a strong comedy background. She's a comedian. Exactly. She's a stand-up. She's a writer. It's not like they were like, and Zendaya. And I love Zendaya. But like, that's some shit that normally happens.
It would have been odd if they just threw her in the mix.
Yeah.
Especially with those women. That is very likely that that would be what happened.
Yeah.
But no, they chose Leslie Jones, who's awesome on Saturday Night Live. You mentioned she was also in Top 5.
Yeah.
I had to go back.
She was super funny in Top 5. Yeah.
Yeah. Top 5 was great.
Top 5 was a good movie. There's some things where I was just like,
Yeah, it's definitely some.
But
I mean, Chris Rock.
Overall, it made me feel really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me to see a black film, a black comedic film, that kind of well done too.
Yeah. 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 And it was a black romantic comedy, which was cool.
Yeah. With little fuck shit, as
yeah.
you would say.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some.
Well, it was like cool to see a comedy about like, that was about two black people getting together that wasn't about like, why do I get married or why can't I find no man? And it's like, you know, all that kind of garbage.
Yeah. Or eat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree. But yeah, so Leslie Jones, awesome career. Excited for that. See the trailer. And like immediately what stuck out to me is in the first scenes of the trailer, you have Melissa McCarthy. You have Kristen Wiig.
Uh-huh.
You have Kate McKinnon.
Uh-huh.
Standing in front of this, like, creepy looking, like, olden times woman ghost.
Yeah, and getting vomited on.
And there's no Leslie Jones.
No, there is no Leslie Jones.
Until, like, midway through the trailer, after they introduce all the three women who I've noted as like brilliant scientists, the best in their
field. And they're like,
you do
this specialization. I have this specialization. You have this other specialization.
And there's Leslie Jones. And she's like, hey, y'all, I want to be in the mix.
I'm not good at this science stuff like y'all, which is like literally what she said. Yeah. I'm not good at this science stuff like y'all, but I know the city.
I know the city because
I'm an MTA worker.
Yeah.
And like, there's nothing wrong with being an MTA worker, but
the problem with this whole thing, and it's not like this got missed. I don't want to, like, there was, I mean, that day on Twitter when the trailer came out, and since then it's been consistent.
Yeah.
And folks talking
you tweet, I missed
back.
It because I did a subtweet.
I was excited. I was like, I subtweeted, black women are scientists too.
Yeah, I remember I saw that.
It's like, it's true. Like, for me, it was just like, what the fuck? Like, you have an opportunity. Like, the part of the point of this film is to highlight the fact that, yo, women are funny, too. Women can be the stars, the primary stars, without, like, you know, some significant male support, mm-hmm. quote unquote, of a big budget, like, comedy film
mm-hmm.
playing off a premise that is, like, universally loved. Like, they can carry this film. And you incorporate someone who is black and then put them in a role where it seems like tacked on, if you will, to that narrative.
Not only tacked on to that narrative, but also like part of what makes the film, what is supposed to make the film narrative is not just women are funny too, but also like women can be scientists.
Yes.
But and so it's like, you know, like, what would it have hurt to have also made Leslie Jones a scientist? What would it have hurt? Yeah. That's the thing that I'm just like, and then, you know, and then there was that whole thing where they were like, oh, well, that role was originally written for Melissa McCarthy, which had me going because I was like, okay, so you have the fat white woman.
Yep.
Is she going to play the buffoon? Or is the black woman going to play the buffoon?
Great
and it's
choices.
It's just like, yeah, exactly. And like, on one level, I totally get it. Like, Melissa McCarthy has played the quirky best friend. Yeah. She has played the chubby this woman, the weirdo, the kook. Like, you know, all of these different things. And like, I want to say even on Mike and Molly, which I don't know if it's still on TV or not.
It just got canceled.
Yeah, but like, she was playing one half of a couple that met at Overeaters Anonymous or something like that. Like, her work is a lot of times based around her size.
Yeah.
And the way that she looks.
You know, I mean, she obviously has embraced that. And I sometimes I wonder, though, how much of it. I mean, it's clear that she likes it to a degree.
Well, it's like also like, does she like it or does she have to be? I mean, I'm being real, though.
So at first I would say, like, honestly, that's what like that was a question that was on my mind, too. But in her more recent films, a lot of times she's big money now. You know what I'm saying? Like she carries these films and she has writing input, executive producer.
Right.
Credit.
But I'll put to you like this. How many projects starring black people still fall into the same type of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where it's like, you only are offered so many things. And like, I'm not saying that, you know, being a white woman who's of a certain size is anything like being a black woman or being a black person, period.
Yeah.
But when you're a person whose certain characteristics about you, whether they be, you know, like size or if it's purely physical or if it's your gender or whatever, there's going to be all sorts of things that you like kind of like. If you got to play, yeah. You know, yeah, play along, get along or whatever. So, yeah, I'm sure that she has some control over it. But I can't imagine that if you asked Melissa McCarthy, like, hey, would you like to play like a romantic lead in a story that has nothing to do with your size?
Yeah. That she's going to be like, nah.
Yeah. She's going to be like, nah, actually,
it's not really my type of humor.
I prefer the show where I met in Chicago Overeaters Anonymous group.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think that what she's done with it has been interesting. And like what she did with her role in Bridesmaids and all of these other films.
The
like,
heat, yeah.
Like, I remember when Bridesmaids came out, I was like, you know, they got the big girl doing.
Lifting her leg up.
Yeah. But like she was super, like she did so much with it. Like she did so much with the
her part. Character was really like her character was memorable not just because she was a large woman who had physical comedy, like she was ridiculously fucking funny,
and she's managed to like bring that to a lot of these other roles, but I'm sure she would like to like not always play like the kooky whoever. So like I do understand, like Paul Feig was like, oh, you know, he originally wrote this part for Melissa, which is its own thing, right? But then, like, you know, we thought we should make her a scientist.
Yeah.
He could make that walk from Melissa McCarthy, but, like, the same case for some reason couldn't be made with the same group of people for Leslie Jones.
Yeah.
And it's like, what would it have hurt? You know, it just kind of annoys me that, like, it just doesn't stick out to people. Have you ever considered the fact that maybe it's really comfortable for you to see a black woman as an MTA worker who doesn't have, quote-unquote, book smarts, but has lots of street smarts?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And access to a Cadillac.
Right. That's actually a hearse. Like why? Like, it's like, nobody questioned why that was comfortable for them.
Or pushes themselves to even do some research around that fact.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, this narrative of having the three scientists and then the one kind of, like,
streetwise,
every man, you know, quote-unquote, every person, is the exact same plot structure and character structure as the original Ghostbusters.
Yep.
Which, you know, obviously, in that particular case, that other person, that every person, was Ernie Hudson. Ernie Hudson, in this particular case, you know, he went through the same thing. His role was originally written for Eddie Murphy and was massive. Like, you know, he was going to be like top billing. But for some reason, I think Eddie Murphy turned the role down. Or Eddie Murphy, for some reason, was no longer involved with the film.
Even though I don't know if that was true, if that was just a rumor. I don't know.
But I'm not positive, too. But somehow, basically, Eddie Murphy was no longer in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernie Hudson auditioned for the role as written.
Yeah.
As written.
And it was supposed to be, like, this guy who was, like, you know, in the Air Force. And he was, like, brought in early in the script and, like, was a character throughout the whole thing.
Fleshed out, full person. And then the day before filming, he gets a new script that is where he doesn't come in till, you know, like, I think it's like halfway through he actually comes into the film. He gets very little character development. They didn't even put him in the poster of the film. Like, he might as well not have been in the original team before, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
It's clear that he wasn't, quote unquote, needed. And you do, you have that scenario. And he's recently, you know, around the same time that the trailer lost, he talked about this and how it made him feel.
Yeah. Which and I never knew that story.
I didn't know that story either. And to be real, I revered Ernie Hudson in that role. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He was the black man.
I was going to say, he's a person, if you asked me who was in Ghostbusters when I was six, I would have been like, this black man and Rick Moranis.
Yeah. And, you know, they were the stars of the film.
Yeah, I was like, this is the two main characters of the film. Now I get older, Harold Ramis in Ghostbusters, not too shabby. Not too fucking shabby.
No, I was all about trying to be, like later in life, I was all about trying to be Peter Venkman. Yeah, which is, I mean.
Unsurprising.
Yeah, it's probably true to life. But yeah, you know, this is something that's been going on for a long time. And if I'm Paul Feig, I don't have to look that far to see a similar narrative and understand what happened with this particular story to change it. So to see that, you know, or disregard that, not do any additional work to say, am I pushing the boundaries for someone who is known as a writer and director who pushes boundaries in terms of what actors and actresses are capable of and how they frame the story and their importance to the story. Like, it's just like, it's really fucking disappointing.
There's not a lot of people that I have like a lot of trust, faith, or high hopes in.
Yeah.
But like, I've really admired Paul Feig for a long, 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 long time. I was excited when I heard that he was going to direct Ghostbusters because he had done not just such a great job with Bridesmaids. He was good with it. He was good at The Heat.
Yeah.
And he's good at like, physical / like kind of slapstick comedy, like in ways that are fresh and fun, but also Freaks and Geeks. Yeah. Like Freaks and Geeks was told from the point of view of a teenage girl in like suburban Michigan. Like, I know what that feels like. And he like so got it. And he was so respectful of her point of view and like the things that she may have been feeling and where she was coming from. And like I felt like this dude is really good at getting in the shoes of people who aren't him. And like, this to me seemed so fucking tone deaf.
Yeah. And even the response to it also, like the response to it. The response to it was actually what kind of pissed me off more than the actual act itself.
Yeah.
Because again, it's not surprising that this would happen. It's disappointing that these people did it.
Yeah. But like,
it's not surprising. Shit happens all the time.
Yeah.
But their response to it was, why wouldn't we have an MTA worker? You know, in this team.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we have, like Leslie Jones even went on Twitter and said herself, oh, I'm proud to be an MTA worker. She like shared a letter where like this MTA worker was like, oh, thank you for portraying us on TV. We often don't get a lot of credit, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now, true. There aren't a lot of characters who play MTA workers on TV, in TV and film, right?
Yeah.
And MTA is Metro Transit Authority, Metropolitan Transit Authority. So, you know, that's like the subway. All right. But that's not the critique.
No.
That's not what people are talking about.
No. Like, if we are over here, the point, like, if y'all are over here with whatever you think, the point is far,
far away.
Direction.
Like, the issue is that you have a team of people. You have three white women scientists, and the black woman, and black women specifically, are often not portrayed in roles where they are seen in a professional light. There was like a study recently surveying people who worked in like laboratories and stuff, and it said that black women were often thought like to be like the support or help staff in the workplace as opposed to scientists.
Yes.
And researchers.
Like, frequently mistaken for people who are on, like, the custodial team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you put a black woman in the film and then relegate her to what is someone who is, you know, probably not slightly, less educated, has less power, and is not an essential member of the team beyond, I know the city and stuff, and I have access to a Cadillac.
Yeah.
That is the critique. The history is the critique. The structure of your film and her being a relative footnote in it is the critique. And to ignore that is, I mean, it's patronizing to a degree. Like, to think that...
It's just like, on what planet do you, like, if somebody, like, it's like, I don't know, it's like, Eric, it's like if I asked you, let's say I told you to go to the store and buy me some potatoes, right?
Yes.
That'd be like if you went to the store, you decided instead to buy me some corn. You came to my house, you gave me the corn, and then I was like, why did you not buy the potatoes? If you were like, why are you criticizing my shoes? And it's like, no. Like, what? Like,
yeah.
I asked you, there's a clear case for the question that I want to ask you, and you're talking to me about something totally different. Like, you are willfully ignoring the conversation that I want to have, which is worthy of having. You chose a black woman to portray, like, a very, like, loud, brassy stereotype. Like a, I think it's like,
sassy black woman.
Yeah, sassy black woman, kind of sapphire, who also is like, well, somebody who without a science background in a movie that's supposed to be about scientists.
Yeah.
So if I ask you about that, it's very clear that race had something to do with it, whether explicitly or implicitly. And then you just make it about class, which is funny because that's actually how most racial conversations in America go now anyway.
That's what the jig
is. This is a conversation that we have to have. Over and over and over again. And it's like almost bizarre to me that people have not figured out at this point that, like, it's not even like we're having this conversation only between our, you know, I would say within the lifetime of our show.
Yeah.
A lot of the conversations that we used to have between us on the show and like with the people who listen, a lot of those conversations have now become more public.
Yeah.
As like just within the past year and a half.
Yeah.
So it's like weird to me that, like, now these conversations are, you know, they went from private to the internet. They've gone from internet to mainstream entertainment news consumption to the point where, like, the Oscars this year was affected. The coverage of the Oscars was affected by people having these public conversations about race and entertainment. And it's like, how willfully ignorant do you have to, how butthurt and willfully ignorant do you have to be to kind of, like, continue this shit?
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like it's going to change that much. Like, people are definitely more cognizant of it, but, you know, typically within these conversations, they seemed perplexed at how to actually solve this problem.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's frustrating in itself, but you actually brought something up that I think is another, like, important part of this Ghostbusters critique specifically. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, you talked about Leslie Jones, who's, like, her comedy very much fits into that, like, sassy black woman trope a lot.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I've never really had a problem with Leslie Jones's comedy or her approach to comedy, you know? Like,
she had a couple sketches. I don't watch Saturday Night Live, but I do know that she had a couple that people weren't pleased with. But still, like, I would say over the whole of her work that I've seen, like, in the right context, I think Leslie Jones is, like, just fucking hilarious.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, the qualifier that you put on it is kind of the important part. That's kind of what I want to talk about a little bit. The in the right context. Like, you mentioned Top Five, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think her scene is, like, that's where they're, like, he goes home to his family. He's, like, talking to them. So they're, like, you know, like, shooting the shit. And it's, like, literally just how, like, most people's families are. You go home and they, like, talk about each other for, like, an hour.
Hours, yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically, like, the show, our show, if you removed all the substantive things we could talk about, or just, you know, make fun of each other for, you know, like 15 minutes at a time. But yeah, and like that, like seeing her in that role, like, I'm cracking up.
Yeah. She's hilarious.
Yeah. Seeing her on many SNL skits, even when she's playing off of, like, when she's playing off like Kenan or Jay.
Yeah.
I'm cracking up.
Yeah.
But that, like, seeing the last scene where she's smacking...
Oh, last scene of the trailer. Yeah.
Smacking... the last scene of the trailer where she's smacking Melissa McCarthy across the face and screaming, you know, the power of Patty. Her name is Patty.
Yeah.
Compels you. I wasn't cracking up.
No, I wasn't cracking up. I wasn't... Like, none of it made me laugh. When she's playing off of other black folks or in the right context, there is a different rubric for understanding... Do you know what I'm saying? There's a different language. There's a different frame of reference for understanding her humor where certain things are going to be understood. Certain things don't have to be explained. Certain things don't seem foreign. And I felt like she was in a different comedic context than she normally is, or like maybe than a context where she would shine under other circumstances.
Yeah.
As a result, to me, a lot of the things that make her comedy good in the right context, like when they were taken out of that and put in this Ghostbusters film, it just felt like she was the butt of a lot of jokes.
I think it comes back to the fact that, you know, something you also said earlier, like you're choosing that particular role between Melissa McCarthy or Leslie Jones. And like you're choosing the butt of the jokes to be either someone's physical weight
or their race.
And like that is the part is what's distracting about it. Like it's not that what she's saying is funny or, you know, her delivery of that humor is the focal point. It's her being black and saying these things and delivering in this particular way, which is, in that context, like you said, a very common trope.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the part that I was like, damn.
It's lazy comedy.
Yeah, because Leslie Jones can even do that. Like, she's smart enough and talented enough to do her same type of humor, which I'm not saying, like, this is not a very different type of humor for her.
No.
But she's smart enough to write, like, a skit and a context in which that is changing the way in which we would normally perceive that type of humor.
Like, the reason why she was even in Top 5, and I want to say the reason why she even is on Saturday Night Live, is because Chris Rock actually has been one of her biggest supporters for a long time. Like, he loves this woman.
Yeah.
And she's obviously got a considerable amount of talent.
Yeah.
And, like, Leslie Jones is Leslie Jones is Leslie Jones. Like, even when she tweets and she says thang. She's like, this ain't a race thing or a class thing. It's a Ghostbusters thing. So, like, to a certain degree,
she is herself.
But, like, it's disturbing to see how much, like, when you don't have control of the context that you're presented in, like, how it changes. The power dynamic goes back to
it. It's like they used her against her.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who aren't familiar with Leslie Jones who are going to see this movie.
Yeah.
And, like, any of the nuance of her comedy, like, and her abilities is just going to be lost.
Yeah.
On them.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Then she will then fulfill another, like, whatever ideas that they already had about black women, specifically black women who are over 40 and, you know, MTA attendance.
Yeah. So there's another film, I think, where there's been a very complicated conversation around the racial aspects of that particular film. And that film is Nina, which is a biopic starring Zoe Saldana and David Oyelowo that chronicles a period in Nina Simone's life. Now, we've done an episode on Nina Simone before.
That we did.
What Happened to Miss Simone is also the title of an excellent Netflix documentary.
So
our episode
good.
Talked about that documentary.
It was a good episode also.
Yeah.
If we do say so ourselves.
So, you know, go back and check that out. Check out the documentary. Mm-hmm. I mean, this film has been kind of floating around in the ether for a minute.
Yeah.
For years, literally.
Yeah, at this point, like maybe 4 years?
Yeah. Before, like, the past couple months, the only thing people had seen to really kind of confirm their fears, and we can speak to the fears in a second, would be just a couple of pictures from, not even on set, just from, like, Zoe Saldana walking around in blackface. I don't even know. I mean, it has to be. Blackface.
Skin darkening makeup.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And a nose prosthesis. And yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead. That was all.
And even that was like, what the fuck? Like, come on now. Mm-hmm. Like, come on. But to be honest, I had kind of forgotten about it.
Well, but I think we talked about this before. Neither one of us thought the movie was actually going to come out ever.
Yeah.
We just never thought it was going to come out. Never thought it was going to come out. It was so preposterous, and people clapped back so hard.
Yeah. So loudly.
Like, yeah.
Her family, you know, her daughter, Nina Simone's daughter was like, no, no, no,
mm-mm.
No, 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 don't do this. And so many people supported that and said the same. Then that trailer dropped.
Whew.
Oh, my God. You said this, and I was thinking it when I first saw it. It's like, it felt like a spoof.
Yeah.
Or a parody.
Yeah.
Like, and if it was a parody, it would have been a great one.
Yeah, I kept waiting for Will Ferrell to come out nude.
Yeah, like,
that's like how, like, it just looked crazy.
Like, the fact that this woman bears no resemblance to Nina Simone.
No.
Sounds nothing like her.
Can't sing.
like, even just normal vocal intonation, her voice profile is very, very different, distractingly different.
Yeah.
The skin darkening makeup, as you say, that she is wearing is the wrong shade.
Yeah, not only is it not the wrong shade, it's like not blended. She's poorly lit throughout the entire thing. It's actually bizarre how terrible it looks. It's like, it didn't even seem like they hired a makeup artist to me.
Yeah, like it was very do-it-yourself.
Yeah.
So, you know, seeing this, I'm like, really, like, what? Like, what the fuck?
Well, because the trailer means that it snagged distribution, which was the thing that got me where I was just like, oh.
Somebody paid for this to come out on a nationwide release.
Because they were like, people need to see this. I'm just rubbing my eyes because, like, no one needs to see this.
So, you know, and rightly, folks got pissed off. I know I was pissed off.
I was pissed. You know how I feel about light-skinned people going places where they don't need to be. Mm. It's embarrassing for the whole lot of us. And, like, in one context, I do, like, Zoe Saldana is Dominican and Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
In that context, and also, like, I don't know if you've ever seen her natural hair before, but she's got a curly head.
Yeah.
In that context, she is, like, blacker than a lot of folks.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that that colors her idea of her identity.
In this film?
Yeah. I think that it colors her idea of her identity just as a black woman, period. I think that in a lot of contexts, she probably was dark-skinned.
Yeah.
But not to the degree that Nina Simone was.
Nowhere near.
Nowhere in that neighborhood. And also, like, being black in America and being black and dark-skinned in America and being a black dark-skinned woman in America with, you know, full lips and a wide nose, that is a totally different thing than being, you know, what some people may feel is a darker brown skin, you know, Afro-Latina from the Caribbean. It's a different fucking ballgame.
And even the fact that those things that you just outlined were so central to the identity and art and, like, personhood of Nina Simone specifically.
Yes.
Like, this is someone who, you know, as we highlighted in the show, like, really, really struggled with her own value and her place in the world and people's interpretation of her because of the fact that she was dark-skinned.
Yes.
Because of the fact that she had a wide nose. Because of the fact that she had full lips.
Yeah.
Like, all of these things contributed so much to the pain and the significance of her work.
Yeah.
Like, they were built into it. So to disregard that and think we can cover this up with a bit of, you know, with a different color foundation.
Yeah.
And a prosthesis.
Yeah.
Is like, is ridiculous and blasphemous, it feels like.
It is blasphemous.
You know, like, this is one of the icons. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, she is one of the icons in music. She's an icon in music, civil rights.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just like massive, means so much to people. And you take these points that are crucial to the understanding of who she actually was and fuck them up in a biopic.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually been some great writing on this from both, like from Cara Brown. From Gawker, who highlighted the fact that basically everybody who's involved with the movie Nina is white.
Yeah.
Except for Robert Johnson.
Stay black like Bob Johnson. Didn't Ludacris say that in a song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, who founded BET.
Yes.
Who's one of the executive producers. And maybe David Oyelowo, who is the co-star of the film. Those are basically the only black folks involved.
Yes.
You know? And that should signal a problem.
But no, I don't know that it does signal a problem. Every other, like, okay, who do you think made The Color Purple? Okay, that's what I'm saying, which is a movie that a lot of people think is great. I think it's well done. Do I think it would be better done by a black woman than by Steven Spielberg?
Yeah.
Hell motherfucking yes.
And I'm one of the people who think it's great. But yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But still, it's like that whole thing, like, who's in front of the camera, who's behind the camera?
Yeah.
If there's black people in front of the camera, it's still white people behind the camera on pretty much, like, everything outside of Spike Lee and Tyler Perry I will say Ava does a good job. She has a decent amount. She's gained a decent amount of pull in the past few years.
Yeah.
But otherwise, for the most part, if there are black people in front of the camera, there are white people behind the camera. And there are certainly white people signing the checks and certainly white people in the development meetings. Almost exclusively.
But
the way that Kara did it in the post, she showed all of their photos.
Yeah.
And so when you get to actually see it, and you, when I looked in the face of the woman who did the makeup, what's crazy is I'm sure these people think that they're doing a great service by sharing the story.
Yeah.
In theory, sharing the story is a great idea.
And sharing the story is the important thing.
Yes.
As opposed to getting the story right.
Yes.
And like, and this is also significant. And like that post was really important too. I agree, from like scrolling down, seeing the faces.
Yeah.
But also understanding how every single piece, like every single piece of their work is complicit. Like, you know, this wasn't just a fail at the executive producer
no.
level. It wasn't just a fail at the casting director
level. It was just
level.
A fail at Zoe Saldana.
Yeah, like it is a fail for like the makeup artist, the director of photography, who I agree couldn't light her for shit.
Couldn't light her or David Oyelowo.
Yeah.
They're the two leads in the movie.
Of the whole film.
And they're both black and they couldn't even get lit.
When you do this.
Yeah.
It is a breakdown at every single piece of the film. That is why it's important to have people who have some background and connection to these stories to empower them to tell it the way it should be told.
Exactly. But then there's the other thing. Ta-Nehisi Coates also wrote a lot about this. Did you mention that? Did you mention his name?
I don't know if we
got there yet.
Nah.
So, Ta-Nehisi wrote a fair amount about this.
Yeah.
And there's one about Nina Simone's face, and there's one about the appropriation of Nina Simone. They're both excellent.
Yeah.
But in one in particular, he breaks down Zoe Saldana. She said there are other black actresses that turned down the role, and that she turned down the role for a year before she said yes because she felt like the story should be told. And like, he was like, I will grant you understanding that you would feel that way, but like, it's scarier that it's terrifying that like there is such a small pool of black actresses from which to choose that Zoe Saldana was even considered for this role.
Yeah.
Like, I used to want to go into casting. That was what I wanted to do. That was what I had like internships in and things like that. Like, I love casting directors. I love knowing shit like this. I love knowing this kind of information. And there's a list of people that I would think of in my mind who should be considered for a Nina Simone movie. And like there were other people that were like that at least could have been given a shot and could have been in the mix.
Yeah. It's not only the fact that they darkened her skin. They also aged her up. Like, this is not a film about her early life.
No.
This is about her
later years. She's in her 50s, probably.
Yeah. You could have went to Viola Davis, one of the biggest people on TV.
Literally.
Has starred in major films.
Yes.
Oscar-nominated
woman. Yeah. And has spoken about living that same experience. I would have loved to have seen, a middle-aged black woman come through, or a black woman who's even older than that, like a woman who's, you know, 50s, 60s, come through and just murder that part. I would have loved to have seen that. And it makes me sad that, like, the world, our country, and that, like, Hollywood is in such a state, or rather, that Hollywood remains in such a state. It's too risky to take, it's too financially risky to take a chance on a black woman that people haven't heard of yet. And financial risk is enough of a concern to just let this woman's story languish.
But the truth is, like, honestly, that's kind of, so, like, even that piece of it is kind of bullshit to them. Because, you know, they just want to get this story told. They just want to get this story out.
No, they want to
But
make
the
money.
Financial risk.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? Like, they try to portray it as this story was too important to leave by the wayside.
Yeah.
You know, but we got to make money.
Yeah. I get it. You can't, it's really difficult to try and invest, you know, millions of dollars into something and just like put it out. No, there are very few people who are in a position to do that with something of entertainment value. But maybe you just should make something else.
Yeah.
Like, just make something else. Maybe you should make Ghostbusters.
Yeah. It should just bums me out. It really bums me out. It bums me out because, and also just because, like, the thing that we talk about, so I agree that you mentioned that it's not all Zoe Saldana's fault.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true. But, like, I would also think that those two specifically would kind of know better. You know what I'm saying? Like, Zoe Saldana is somebody
and
who has talked.
Those two.
Oh, sorry, David Oyelowo.
Okay.
Like, they both have talked at length, you know, in the media about like blackness and issues of black actors and actresses not being hired for leading roles. Like, Zoe Saldana has had to hustle for a long time to get to the stature that she's at right now, where
she's starring
in like. In basically every, you know, big budget action movie. She's the okay black actress to cast.
She is. She really is.
As the lead actress now. And David Oyelowo, coming off of what should have been an Oscar-nominated portrayal.
Hello.
You know, as Martin Luther King in Selma, and who also is someone who has been
hustling,
you know, as an amazing character actor, trying to prove, you know what I'm saying, to the world at large that he can be a lead. Like, I would have anticipated that they would have seen the complexities around this film.
No, you know why I didn't anticipate it? Because he's a black man, and she is like a very conventionally attractive, lighter-skinned black woman. I'm going to tell you something right now. There's not a thing in this world that I put past light-skinned people, and there's no shade. As far as colorism and attractiveness and things of that nature, which like... It doesn't always present itself professionally, but when your profession is entertainment, it presents itself all of the time. I do not put shit past straight black men specifically, but I don't put shit past black men as far as lacking understanding of those dynamics and how those things play out. Specifically, the Nina Simone's face piece that Ta-Nehisi talked about.
Yeah.
He quoted this Biggie lyric. Heartthrob never, black and ugly as ever. However, I stay coochie down to the socks. Rings and watch filled with rocks and my jam knocks. Okay? Like, it reminds me, actually, weirdly enough, of this thing that's been happening on Instagram this past week with Beyonce's cousin. So for those of y'all who don't know.
Because I actually don't know.
Oh, okay. I'm going to show you right now. Because this will be great. We can record your reaction. So Beyonce's Uncle Skip passed away, and they had the funeral this past week, I guess, down in Texas or something like that. So Beyonce had a photo with like a couple of her cousins, who are two very beautiful light-skinned women from the South, who both have longer and more loosely curled hair than she does, right?
Yeah.
One of them also specifically, just for those of you all who might know what I'm talking about, was wearing a blue dress. Eric just moved his neck. Wearing a blue dress, and she's got a nice backside. Congratulations to this woman. She's got an amazing figure. Very, very beautiful family. But there is a meme that I saw on Tumblr that said, when you realize that Beyonce was the Kelly Rowland of her cousins. Mm. So, yeah, exactly. Which is like, it's fucked up. So you have like Biggie, which like, no shade. He was not the finest man on the face of the planet, right?
Yeah.
Right. He said it himself. He was not the finest man in this world. And all of the things that a person in the United States is that you would think that they need to be attractive, he was not.
Yeah.
Right? And so you have Beyonce, who in like almost day in and day out is like held to be like a standard in many senses for black female attractiveness.
Yeah.
She's light skinned. She has small angular features. She often is sporting long wavy blonde hair. And then you put like when you put her in a different, here's the C word again, when you put her in another context, when she's with cousins of hers who have even lighter skin and even longer, more loosely curled hair. And obviously, you know, there are some figure differences that within the black community people find very valuable. But
that was a great.
I follow this woman on Tumblr, Rashida Renee. She used to be How to Be a Fucking Lady. I think she's something else now. I can't remember. But she was saying that, like, you know, okay, like her cousin, like this bothered her because she was like, okay, Beyonce's cousins are cute, but also Kelly Rowland is beautiful.
Yeah.
Right?
Gorgeous.
So, yes. Gorgeous
woman.
So when people talk about Kelly Rowland being the, you know, quote unquote, the Kelly Rowland of something, it's like, okay, so like.
That's an insult.
That's an insult. And also Kelly Rowland, for those of you all who don't know, she was a member of Destiny's Child and is Beyonce's best friend and play sister. She, fucking gorgeous, talented woman, rich as all get out, has a beautiful husband, baby, family. She also is brown skinned.
Yeah.
But Kelly Rowland, in many senses, is thought to be not as, you know, popping as Beyonce because she's not as light skinned. So Kelly Rowland is beautiful. And then also she said something really interesting. Rashida said something really interesting. She said, stop measuring women's worth by their looks. Beyonce is literally like one of the most talented people alive. And it doesn't matter if the next what the woman next to her looks like. she's still Beyonce. Like, that's it. But, like, women don't have that same power. For all we know, no shade to Beyonce's cousins, whatever, gorgeous women. But for all we know, they could, you know, whatever they do professionally, it's probably not be one of the, like, the greatest living entertainers and richest women in the world.
Yeah.
Chances are, like, you know, who made money through, you know, their own artistry, chances are they don't have that same level of success. But when you're a woman, specifically a Black woman, it doesn't matter what the fuck you know. It doesn't matter what the fuck you can do. And more specifically, if you're in the public eye like Nina Simone, what you look like can take down your talent, your intellect, your riches, whatever it is that you have, can take that down so many pegs. So already, if you're a woman and you're out here in the public eye, God forbid somebody be, you know, have a fatter ass, be more light-skinned, have longer hair, whatever the fuck, lighter eyes, whatever the fuck people think it takes to be cute out here, right?
Yeah.
So, like, God forbid that happen. But then additionally, like, if you, on top of that, are a dark-skinned woman and you have full lips and you have that broad nose, like, like, it's that much more difficult. So, like, you can't, you can be Beyonce and still have ashy motherfuckers on Instagram shitting on you, your talent, your life, and that of your best friend, and essentially the value and worth of the women in your family, right?
Yeah.
You could be the most powerful, rich Black woman. We talk about Beyonce being a powerful, rich, talented Black woman with a beautiful life, beautiful family. And you could still be her and get shit on like that in 2016 when a whole bunch of shit that was flying back in Nina Simone's time will not fucking fly now. So imagine that. Imagine that in like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Imagine that you are also Nina Simone, okay? And it's just like, who's literally, this woman is, was a fucking genius.
Yeah.
Right? Whose talent and legacy has endured decades and will do so until the end of, you know, time. Right? And it's just like, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that a Black man and a light-skinned woman, when they got the call that said, your people need you. Despite the melee, your people need you. I am not surprised that they were able to cast aside all of these other frameworks and all this other bullshit, because, like, who really in the street among them is better? Who? So like, all they are is regular people who happen to hit a lick and get a good job that they don't want to lose.
Yeah. I mean, it's just tough. Honestly, it's tough. Because, like, I'm married to a Black woman. I'm married to a dark-skinned woman.
Mm-hmm.
And my child is dark-skinned,
mm-hmm.
you know? And you see progress in a lot of areas, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, there's progress in the sense that, like, there's a coordinated and substantive clapback when shit like this happens, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But it's still frustrating to, like, you know, I've been quiet because I'm sitting here thinking, like, I don't really know what the catalyst is for significant change like this, because significant change on these fronts, like on mm-hmm. the colorism front, like on, like in talking about Leslie Jones and her, and there's some colorism aspects to, like, you could talk about how Leslie Jones's humor, you know, in addition to her appearance, how they contribute to the fact that she was selected to play, you know, what is seemingly the sassy Black woman or the buffoon type character in this particular movie. But the overall conversation there could be, you know, if we are thinking more about the people who are in front and behind the camera, maybe those things have changed. But in terms of the overall narrative, like in our community, how we evolve thinking about colorism and things mm-hmm. like that. Honestly, it is kind of depressing because I don't really see it. It's still so prevalent. I was listening to something today, like I mean you said this before and I've said it too, but like, yo, I'm so tired of the word foreign. Like, I am so tired of the word foreign.
Yeah.
In rap music. Like, that shit is so fucking frustrating. And it's frustrating not only because of what it says about Black women, but to not realize that when you say that, you are also saying something about yourself.
Hell yes.
Like, that shit is just really, I don't know, I'm really kind of blown. Like, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I obviously think a lot about the conversations I'm gonna have to have with Eve at some point. And I don't know. I don't know. That's, I mean, you know, maybe Carla is more equipped to have that conversation, obviously, because she's, you know, she's lived as a Black woman.
But you should learn, though.
I mean, yeah, no, I mean, I'm going to have it. It's not necessarily, I mean, you know who I am. It's not that I'm not prepared to have the conversation. It's that I often like to feel empowered with solutions. You know who I am. You know what I'm saying? And I understand the context of how to talk about race and preparing her for how to deal with her race being a factor on the whole. But to break it down, you know, even more, to talk about how her being a dark-skinned child is going to affect her life is, like, that's one of the ones I just don't know how to talk about the not necessarily solutions, because solutions is a weird word, because, like, let's be real, it's not going to get solved.
No.
But... You understand what I'm saying? Like,
no, I mean,
know
I wouldn't. I
the
wouldn't.
Tools to prepare her to, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, we always end on these really depressing notes. But to come back to it, you know, in the case of these two movies, you know, I think, obviously, the through line is, like, we need to be more involved. And I think we're continuing to demand that we are more involved. And
yeah.
I think measures are slowly happening that will help.
Yeah. Well, the fact that even a black, like every time a backlash gets reported on,
yeah,
that helps.
Yeah. I think those things will slowly change over time. But it's frustrating when people take these conversations and in both scenarios, they try to make them not about the thing that we are talking about. It's almost like gaslighting.
Yeah.
Like you're just ignoring
the fucking thing
that we are talking about. In terms of the critique, is really, really, really fucking frustrating.
Yeah.
In the case of Ghostbusters, I still want to see it because I think...
I still want to see it, too.
Because, again, going back to Leslie Jones and her talent, she is very, very talented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is probably some opportunity for her to still subvert some of the common tropes, like, that would be associated with how they've portrayed her character so far.
Well, I think the same way that, like, Melissa McCarthy's characters have always managed to transcend what, like,
in
the initial...
Way.
Yeah. I like, I'm curious to see the film to see what happened. Like, if Leslie Jones' character is given the same breathing room to kind of subvert.
Yeah, but in the case of Nina, like...
I've never seen that shit.
Yeah. I can't do it. Because, I mean, Nina's story is one that is deeply, deeply rooted in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So, to go into a story where you know it's going to feel painful,
mm-hmm.
and then on top of that, they are inflicting pain by disregarding the nature of the very thing that they're discussing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't get over that, because especially because of the fact that we have this visual reminder of their ignorance and disregard.
I can't imagine my eyes adjusting to that visage, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. So, like... I'm not going to see that one. Not even the shit on it. Like...
No, I just don't. I, like... It's just not... No. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No. I just don't have... I don't have to.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. I don't have to. Mm-mm. It's not like Red Tails. Do you know what I'm saying? Red Tails just wasn't that popping.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It just wasn't that popping. So it's like, all right, I can skip Red Tails. Like, Django, I can see how, like... I mean, Django was its own can of worms. I know. I will say, even among Black people have different feelings about Django. I've never seen it. I probably never will.
Yeah.
But, like, I know that you've seen it and that you kind of like it. And I respect your judgment and opinion. And there are other people whose opinions and judgment I respect who, like Django and who've seen it. Other people who I know, they haven't. I mean, or they saw it, they didn't like it, or they haven't seen it at all. But, like, Nina to me is just like, I don't, what's the point? Like,
it's another
I could
level.
Even see Django as like a conversation piece, like something in
totally.
It so crazy is happening that, like, you need to fucking just, like, I just don't see the point in.
And even with Django, like, speaking to that further, like, there is value in the conversation around dissecting that particular movie. Like, there are, I mean, definite issues with it for sure.
Yeah.
In a major way. But there is value in unpacking that and all the pieces of it.
Yeah.
But with this, like, all we need to dissect is the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. And which we did. It's just,
begrudgingly.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Colorism is real. If you forget it, fuck you. Or if you forget it, you could still be Beyonce and somebody will remind you. Wasn't that some fucked up shit?
Yo, Kelly, man. Kelly is a fine woman.
I know.
gorgeous woman.
I know.
Anyway, to try to turn this back.
Yeah.
toward a more positive note. We do appreciate you listening to
we
our
do.
Show.
We do. We know what we appreciate even more is rates and reviews on iTunes.
On iTunes. Go to iTunes, rate and review us, share our show.
Yeah.
Tell your friends about it, and then tell us what you think.
Yeah.
Please continue to send us emails.
Yeah.
We do read them, and we are always considering. And I, honestly, we really appreciate when people come and pitch stuff to us, too.
Yeah, it gives us something to talk about.
Yeah. So... thank you for listening, continuing to rock with us, and we will be back very soon.
Okay, peace.
Bye.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.